A new report by the Wisconsin Policy Forum came up with a big number. 25 Wisconsin cities have $2.25 billion in unfunded liabilities for retired health care. The new report was issued by the Policy Forum. We have President Rob Hinken and Research Director Jason Stein. Rob, first of all, it's a new organization.
Yes.
Talk about the merger of, lay it out for us.
Sure. So effective January 1st of this year, the Public Policy Forum, which was a Milwaukee-based nonpartisan policy research organization in existence in Milwaukee since 1913, merged with the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, a Madison-based nonpartisan policy research organization that had been around since 1932. So lots of tradition, lots of history. The result is a new organization, the Wisconsin Policy Forum, which is now a statewide nonpartisan policy research organization.
And does that mean that the scope has expanded from Milwaukee metropolitan issues to this current report statewide scope?
Yeah, so we've really tried to blend the missions of the two organizations. So there's both a statewide focus and a Southeast Wisconsin focus. But I think what's most important is we now have a much better ability to draw the lines between those two. And so clearly, from a greater Milwaukee standpoint, what's happening in Madison is of great importance in the public policy arena. But equally, for the rest of the state, City of Milwaukee, for example, is the largest recipient of shared revenue in the entire state. So when we're talking about issues like OPEB liabilities, someone in La Crosse may not necessarily immediately understand why it's important if Milwaukee's is exceeding $1 billion, but there is really a statewide impact.
And you use the alphabet soup, OPEB, which stands Other Post-Employment Benefits, which is the focus of this report.
Correct.
I find this interesting because you looked at 2013 through 2016 unfunded liabilities for 25 cities, largely for retiree health care. We went from 2013 from 2.1 to 2.25 billion, an increase of 5%. So what was the purpose of the report? What surprised you? Give the overview before we go into the nuts and bolts.
Right. So, I mean, to take it from a big picture, in Wisconsin, we're fortunate that we have most local government pensions in the state of Wisconsin system, which is fully funded.
Yes.
And so that's a tremendous benefit to us. But we do have some liabilities that are outside that system for retirees that we need to keep an eye on, and these are really the principal ones. And so the purpose of the report was to try and give people an update about where these liabilities stand and, you know, what, if anything, can be done for local governments and citizens to manage these obligations, okay? And so what we basically saw is that in the majority of the state, cities are making progress in reducing these obligations, at least the estimates of what they're going to be over the next 30 years. One big exception to that was, at least in 2016, was Milwaukee and Racine,
yes,
which had a big enough increase that it more than canceled out sort of the improvement in the other cities in the state.
Yeah, and let's go to that graphic first, because I find that intriguing, Jason. You speak to the increase in liability, just the city of Milwaukee, $131.4 million. The increase in liability of Racine, 96.7. You make a point on, I think it's page one or two of the report, that exceeded all the progress made by the other 23 counties. So you still had a net, what's the best phrase?
Right. You still had something like $108 million increase in just sort of the total liability. Now, again, you know, these are not statewide liabilities in the strict sense of the word. They're city by city. But in some level, they potentially affect everybody. Because, as Rob said, the state does share aid that it gets from the income and sales tax, yeah, with local governments. Obviously, there's potential impact on services long term, because all of these cities have got to live within property tax caps
fiscal
that are set by the state
revenue
state
limits.
Government. Right. So there's going to be a tension here between covering this liability over the next 10, 20, 30 years and also providing the service levels that people in those communities expect.
Rob, were you surprised at the $2.25 billion number, the increase in 5% over 3 years?
So I think the increase is certainly a surprise, given what we know has happened over the past few years. I mean, I think one of the areas where progress has been made, solely from a fiscal perspective as a result of Wisconsin Act 10, is that local governments throughout the states have been able to have greater wherewithal to control health care benefit costs. And so one might have expected that there would have been a reduction statewide. Again, that was largely the case. For 23 of these 25 cities, there were reductions. We can't link all of that to things that happened as a result of Wisconsin Act 10. But clearly, we saw local governments doing things to change their benefit structure that was having some impact. There were two cities that the opposite took place. Those happened to be two large cities. Yes. Those happened to be two large cities with very large liabilities. The good news, Steve, is that our data sources were complete through 2016. There was an updated estimate of the Racine liability, and so that has gone down in 2017 from $503 million to $386 million. That's a good news, bad news. Good news is it went down. Bad news is it is still a very staggering amount. City of Milwaukee's went up slightly, but if we had had all of the 2017 data, the picture may have been a little bit different. That's why you do have to consider this city by city and not just
lumped. All three of us here are policy wonks, tragically. But so let's let's ask why should residents of the 25 cities care about these numbers, Rob?
Well, so I think first it's very important to keep in mind what this is and what this isn't. So it's an estimate of a liability. And when we are estimating a long-term liability with regard to healthcare benefits, those estimates are laden with assumptions. They're laden with assumptions about what's going to happen to the cost of healthcare over the next 20 or 30 years, what's going to happen to people's lifespans over the next 20 or 30 years. And so what these are actuarial estimates. Number two, it's important, you know, a question I often get is, so what does this mean? Is there going to be a $386 million bill slapped on the desk of the city of Racine next year that they're going to have to come up with all that money? No. These are payments that are made that essentially the estimate assumes an amortization of 30 years over a lengthy period of time. So those are important qualifiers. But on the other hand, now directly answering your question, these are big numbers in terms of our top 10 list. It essentially, what it does mean is that for the foreseeable future, each of these governments is going to have to budget substantially more for healthcare for their retirees each succeeding year. And so the extent to which that's a problem for individual cities is linked to what their revenue streams look like, what their expenditure needs are, what their service level demands are. But it is a serious problem.
Well, bottom line, these unfunded liability numbers could threaten emergency services, police, fire, EMTs. Parks?
Potentially. I mean, I think the big picture here is, again, take the city of Racine. Now, they had this big improvement in 2017, but their per capita liability in that city is still almost $5,000. So even
if that
projection turns out to be twice as high as the actual amount will be, $2,500 per person is still a lot of money. And so that's why we're tracking this, trying to keep it on the radar screens of both the public and public officials, because the good news is that there are some things that cities can do to sort of manage this over time, and maybe we can talk a little bit about how they got in this position in the first place, and then that can sort of lead us into how they might get out of it.
Prior to going to how we got in this position, my question is, are generally city officials, both professional administrators and elected council members, aware of these numbers?
You know, it's a great question, Steve, and I would say that there is some general awareness, but I'm not sure that there is broad understanding among many elected officials as to, again, what this means, because these are big numbers for many of these governments, and they're handling it on a pay-as-you-go basis. So to the extent that elected officials are paying attention to annual budgets, yeah, maybe they're seeing their retiree health care costs go up a couple hundred thousand dollars every year. They're sort of used to that, and they think they can manage it. The question is really, how long is that going to be happening, and how does that conflict with so many of the other needs that they have, as well as the limitations that they have on their revenues?
Okay,
right.
Now,
because I think local officials, they tend to think, and state officials, they tend to think in terms of their budgets a year out, 2 years out, and a year back into the past, a couple years back into the past.
Right.
Whereas obviously, liabilities like these that are 30-year liabilities, it's difficult to wrap your mind around those when you're operating from the perspective of a mayor or an alderperson.
Yeah, but on page 6 of the report, you talk about the current pay-as-you-go. philosophy.
Right.
And you say, currently cities in Wisconsin are paying the cost of retiree health care as they incur it each year. And in 2016, those payments totaled $76.8 million. But the real number, go on, if local leaders wanted to also start providing the necessary funding for their remaining obligations over the next 30, more than double the 76.8, $98 million. That's why these are important numbers. Now let's go to how we got to this.
Sure.
Local governments were like local businesses. They wanted to offer their employees health care. But now you say in the report, baby boomers are retiring and health care costs just through the roof.
Right. So it's important to note that in many cases, we go all the way back to the 1970s when these benefits were offered, 70s and 80s. And obviously the health care landscape was really different. If you're offering someone that sort of health care to take a retiree into to Medicare eligibility age in 1973, the implications of that decision are really different than they are today in 2018.
Yep. Yep.
And in many cases, local government employees can retire pretty early. So in the case of public safety workers like firefighters and police officers, they may be able to retire after 20 years of service in their early 50s.
Right.
And then for that officer and a spouse, may have 12 years of health coverage at $15,000 or $20,000 a year to the local government. And obviously, those costs for just a single retiree can add up quickly.
Right. And the number you use on page 4 is that for that employee, $197,000.
Yeah, right.
From the point where they retire to the point where they qualify for Medicare.
Right, for a hypothetical police officer who retires at 52, 53.
That's a police officer, yes.
So, Steve, just one important qualifier there also, however, is, and we don't know, you'd have to go through city by city, but in some cases, enhanced healthcare benefits were granted instead of salary increases. So
yes.
Maybe instead of in a particular four-year labor contract, instead of having 4% annual increases, it was 2.5% plus an enhancement of the healthcare benefit. And so we can't calculate what those offsetting savings may have been over the years,
yes.
Nor could we get at it anyway unless we were behind the closed doors of the labor negotiations. But again, citizens shouldn't be thinking that this was just something that was handed out without potentially having there been some offsetting savings to these governments.
I want to look now at specific cities who have, I don't want to say done the best and worst, but have made progress and maybe not so much progress.
Sure.
So let's look at that next graphic there. Beloit, Kenosha, Wauwatosa, Oak Creek, and La Crosse. Jason, summarize what happened in those three communities.
Sure.
Better off?
You're obviously seeing those communities reduce the obligations that they have. And what you often see, I know La Crosse is one example where I talk with them, they gradually, over a period of recent years, turned off that benefit, if you will, for newly hired employees.
Now, that's important because you speak later on in the report, that's one option that local governments have,
right,
to not offer retired municipal employees health care in retirement, correct?
Correct.
That's one option.
And I would say over the last 10 years, almost every city in the state has stopped offering that benefit to newly hired workers.
To new workers.
Correct. And where you're seeing, I think, some of the activity happening now and where you may see more activity going forward is that in certain cases under their policies and state law, they may have the ability to reduce or eliminate the benefit for existing workers. In other cases, they may not. And that, you know, so that's sort of an area where a lot of the, you know, policy decisions may be made going forward. But up until now, what you've been seeing more is the benefit being turned off for new hires and maybe potentially a little more difficult to qualify for.
Do you think these five communities that made progress did so largely because of Act 10, Jason?
Here's what I would say. I would say this trend goes back of cities sort of reducing the benefit goes back before Act 10, but I think what you've seen is that trend has intensified, you know, since the passage of that law.
Any PS on that? The impact of Act 10 on local governments? We just saw that report from Wisconsin DOA that teachers are paying more towards their health care. I'm sorry, yep. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, no, so again, it's without really doing a detailed analysis of each of these cities, it's hard to say. I mean, some of this improvement could simply be because some actuarial estimates changed, and so right. we saw an improvement. But I would agree with Jason, you know, Milwaukee County is a perfect example. They recognize that this benefit or that this long-term liability was growing out of control in the mid-90s, and at that time, they shut it off to new employees. So that was many, many years before Wisconsin Act 10. Others have done it more recently. City of Milwaukee just did it a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's, again, there's a counterbalance to that, which is particularly for public safety workers, this is an important benefit. If you're going to risk your life every day and sure. risk the possibility that you're going to have some larger health care costs in retirement than ordinary citizens might, this is a very important benefit to you. So what changing this benefit, even for new hires, what impact is that going to have on your ability to recruit and retain your public safety workers is a consideration that governments have to make.
Absolutely.
Is there any common theme? Now let's look at the five cities who are further behind. Let's be nice. The Sheboygan, West Dallas, Madison, and Racine, and Milwaukee. Is there any commonality in why they got further behind in that window of 13 through 16?
Well, so, and again, some of this can just be driven by things like what's happening with your healthcare costs. So, and for any community that has these liabilities, if they can do things to control costs within their health plan, you know, that's something that can really help them over time address this. You know, it varies community by community. Some of this may just, again, have to do with, you know, more people qualifying for the benefit. It could have, you know, in accruing it. It could have to do with just the changes across healthcare. What I would say for Sheboygan and Madison, you know, they have a very manageable overall liability, even though it did grow.
Yeah, you said Madison's only $255 per
person,
resident.
Right. Whereas West Dallas, you know, is again one of those communities where it's more significant. I mean, it's more than $2,000 per capita in that community.
Rob, as somebody who the old organization focused on the metro area issues, yep. how alarmed are you by the $131.4 million just for the city of Milwaukee, which has been your area yep. of expertise for decades?
Yep. So the good news is that the city of Milwaukee has taken some very aggressive steps to reduce its healthcare spending. This happened both right before Act 10 and right after Act 10. City of Milwaukee now has shut off the benefit for new employees, for non-public safety workers. So while we're still going to be seeing this going up for quite some time, eventually there's going to be a tail to it and it'll start to go down. That's the good news. The bad news is that's a long time away still.
Yes.
Milwaukee is very constrained in terms of its overall revenue growth. Milwaukee has all sorts of very fierce expenditure pressures on the pension side, as well as on the infrastructure side. So it's a concern. I would just add it's an even bigger concern for the city of Racine. Their per capita level is not only much greater than Milwaukee's, but this is a community that simply isn't growing. So their ability to see property tax growth that's going to allow them to even handle this one element of their budget is very, very dubious, and they have all sorts of additional budget pressures besides just retiree health care.
Foxconn is not going to the city of Racine, boosting its equalized value by a potential $10 billion,
well,
is what you just
yes,
said.
Yes, so that is one hope.
Western Racine County.
Right, right, right. And just to add to what Rob said here, he mentioned the pension pressures on the city of Milwaukee. That is because Milwaukee is one of a couple local governments that is not within the state system.
Right.
So that Milwaukee's
a fully funded state system.
Right. I mean, you certainly see pension systems in other parts of the country that are much worse shaped than the cities, but the city is not quite as well positioned as the state pension system.
On page 4 of this report, I'm just fascinated by the numbers. The disparity in per resident unfunded liability, and I'm just going to mention like 6 of them. Per resident liability in Racine, as you just talked about, Rob, $6,458, $2,784. In another community, that I have a typo here, 2328 in West Allis. But Manitowoc, $20, $18 in Wausau, $5 in Green Bay. What a gap. That's why one of the reasons I found the report so interesting.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's a little inexplicable, I think, even now, is why you see sometimes even neighboring communities, one of them has a significant liability, the other one does not.
Right.
And again, because in many cases these decisions were made decades ago, there's not really, in many communities, there's no one you can really go to and say, well, how did it work out this way? Because you talk to a city administrator who's been there for 15 years and they don't know.
Okay.
Well, and again, it's important to note that so for some of these cities with much, much smaller retiree healthcare liabilities, it's possible that the annual salaries that they're paying to their public right. safety workers, for example, are greater than those that have the bigger liabilities because they decided to do it on the salary side versus a neighboring community that may have decided to do it on the benefit side.
Now, right. let's talk about that tale of two cities. Let's look at Oak Creek and Franklin. Yep. Neighboring, you say they have roughly the same population.
Right.
Oak Creek has an unfunded liability of retiree health care, $45 million. Franklin, 1.2. A disparity per capita, 1,277 per resident Oak Creek. Maybe some neighbors might want to move to next door to Franklin, $35. How can two similar communities have such varying liability? A gap of 35?
Right, Rob makes a good point in that, you know, what we're not seeing here is what are their debt levels for their infrastructure and other things. So we only have this one factor that we're comparing. You know, I think in some cases there may have been private sector employers or other employers who are offering a certain benefit level in a community, okay. and the public sector might have felt they needed to match that. You know, there could be reasons such as that. But again, some of this is just lost to us, and this is an accident of history, and it's something that, again, this is something that they'll be dealing with over 30 years. It's not an immediate crisis, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on.
It's a ticking time bomb, but it's not too loudly ticking now. Any thoughts on the Franklin disparity?
Yeah, I like you, Steve. I mean, the reason I find it so fascinating is again, the likely reason for this is just different ways of looking at compensation for your employees. But here you have two neighboring communities, so you would think that they would be recruiting from the same pool of workers
right.
and so forth, and that
yes.
there would be more similarity. But Jason's right. You know, probably 20, 30 years ago, one set of policymakers made a decision that, hey, look, our compensation approach is going to be to do a very generous retiree health care benefit, but maybe we'll try to keep our salaries a little lower than our neighbors, and the other went the other way. Is possible what happened. We have not done the deep dive into either of these cities.
Rob, do you think this report argues to lift levy limits on the 25 cities that you surveyed?
You know, that's a tough question, because lifting levy limits certainly is not the only approach here, to the extent that we are going to be concerned about each of these cities, that ultimately this liability is going to impact service levels. So what else could you do? Could you look at maybe doing more to encourage consolidation of services in these communities with their neighbors to try to cut costs? I do think it puts pressure on that. I think what it does is it begs the question, something's going to have to give here potentially in the next 5, 10, 15 years, where this obligation is going to start to have a real impact on the day-to-day services that these communities can provide. And so then what are your options? Another option is to go to the voters and try to get the ability to go above the levy limit. So there are options there. But I think in terms of your question, is that something that these communities are going to want to see the legislature to look like, to look at if we still have those levy limits in place? I think the answer is yes.
And obviously, as Rob mentioned earlier, to just pick up one of his threads, local governments will have to balance whatever they do, whether it's reducing this benefit, if they're able to reduce it more, with the fact that we do have 3%, at or below 3% unemployment in the state, and that there is a competitive labor market in which it may be difficult to retain and attract good employees. And, you know, again, they may have to provide something on the salary side if they reduce healthcare benefits or, you know, take other steps like that. So, I mean, it's certainly going to be a balancing act for local governments. I mean, they got themselves, the ones that are in the problem got into it over a period of decades, and so they certainly won't get out of it in a period of months.
And we keep, let's again say, you looked at a 30-year window here, correct?
Yeah, correct. That's how these are calculated.
So this, okay, it's a poor analogy, but this ticking time bomb isn't going to go off in 2019, 2020, and $2.25 billion doesn't have to be paid 3 years from now.
Correct.
But now, let's end the show by looking at what some cities have done or can do.
Right.
You talk about on page 7, if the city still covers retiree health care for some new employees, then it could choose to drop those benefits moving forward. We kind of touched on that earlier. Some cities have done that. Okay?
Yes.
Another option?
Most cities have done that.
Most cities have done that.
Yep.
And that's...
If you have not done that by now, you are an outlier as a city.
And that's a fiscally prudent, good thing to do, right, Rob?
Solely from a fiscal perspective, yes. Again, you have to acknowledge the recruitment and retention questions, but yes, from a financial perspective.
Also on page 7, one measure to lower costs would be to reduce healthcare benefits or increase copays for existing employees. That's controversial. How often has that happened?
And I should say, anything that can reduce your healthcare costs, whether it's an employee wellness program or whether it's opening, as some communities have done, a clinic for city employees or for public employees in the area, any of those things, if that holds down your costs for your overall healthcare plan, then it helps you with this issue. Some of it is just looking at attacking this on multiple fronts, right? I think that there's not one silver bullet that's going to eliminate, you know, removing it for new hires helps you with the new hires. It doesn't help you with the people who have already retired.
So I would just add to that, Steve, that, you know, legal limitations is a key question here. So one of the things that we know you can't do is that if you have promised employer-paid health care to somebody in retirement and their share is 10%, you can't change your mind and say, no, we're going to say, even though they've already retired, we're going to raise that to 50%. That you can't do. What you can do, however, is to the extent that you are changing your health care benefit structure for your active employees,
yes,
by asking for higher copays,
yes,
for different, right, types of office visits and higher deductibles and so on, you can apply that. That plan is still the plan that's being given to your retirees. And so if the cost, right, of that plan goes down, then that could reduce or could produce
a benefit. I think you're speaking of the 2008 Wisconsin Supreme Court decision, right?
Correct.
Yes, yeah, which is also in the report.
Right, and so it's dependent in a lot of cases on what the city has promised to its employees.
Yes.
And so what they're able to do is in some ways dependent on what they have said they would do. And so it's a city-by-city calculation.
And close to that in terms of cities' options to deal with these unfunded liabilities, another option would be to reduce or eliminate the benefit for existing employees who have not fully earned it under the terms of the current local policy. I think we've touched on that.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Any PSs on that? You also, you also mentioned the idea that legislators could also consider whether local government should be pre-funding some or all of their retiree health care liabilities. We've all watched the Capitol for a few decades. Is that a realistic possibility?
Well, there's a big trade-off there, because to the extent that state government would want to do that, of course, you have to enter into the mix. Well, okay, if you're now asking the city of Racine to come up with an extra $10 million each year to pre-fund this benefit, what's going to give there? Does that mean that they're not going to fill their potholes and they're not going to provide sufficient number of police officers, et cetera? So I think clearly you'd have to consider what the consequence of that would be. Is there some way that you could set up some incentive program that, you know, for those communities that do start putting away for this liability, you give them some benefit in some way? Those are the types of things that we've seen other states do to try to get these liabilities under control. But it's tough because the money has to come from somewhere.
Now, I didn't get a chance to interview you when you came out with your earlier study on the city of Racine. What's unique about them that makes them have such a large unfunded liability for health care for their retirees?
I think one thing is that their benefit was quite generous. So their benefit prior to about 10 years ago was 100% payment of your health care costs, not only from your time of retirement until the time that you reached Medicare, but also then the city would pay your Medicare premium for the rest of your life.
Can I just ask, Racine is no longer doing this?
No. So Racine made some important changes for new hires a decade ago, or a little more than that. That did a couple things. Number one, it made it, they changed it so that it was this reimbursement was only until Medicare. Also, they reduce it from 100% to now the retiree has to pay, depending on their class and their length of time service that they worked for the city, of 10 or 15 or 5% is an employee match. So they've cut it down. But again, what they have not yet eliminated is that a City of Racine worker who is hired tomorrow, if that worker works the requisite number of years, which is typically over 20 years, they are promised a benefit in retirement that they will get most likely 90% of their premium costs paid from the day they retire until the day they reach Medicare eligibility.
Wow. We're almost out of time. Maybe one final question. When will this $2.25 billion bill have to be paid? Are we looking crunch time, 5 years, 10 years, 20? I know you took a 30-year window, but when will this Piper have to be paid?
I mean, it's got to be paid within 30 years. We're obviously hitting a point where a lot of people are retiring. We have an aging workforce. So I think my sense is that over the next, 10, 15 years, that the bulk of this is going to be digested. But again, you have to remember that when you're talking about someone that retires at age 55, with the benefit, that can be 10 years for that to play out. So again, we're talking about something that is moving at a very slow pace.
Okay. Any PSs, Rob?
Just that, again, I want to reemphasize, Steve, this is an actuarial estimate. So this is whether it's $2.25 billion or $2.6 billion or $1.6 billion, my sense is, and I'm guessing here, but that's, maybe a range to look at. But as Jason said at the beginning, all of those numbers are very scary numbers. And so while it's an estimate and lots of things can happen in the next 30 years in terms of healthcare in this country, what if we move to some completely different framework? But based on things staying roughly the same, these are scary numbers.
These are scary and they're very important. So thank you so much, Rob Henken and Jason Stein of the Public Policy Forum. Your more statewide reports coming out?
Yes, we have a whole wide range, looking at lots of issues surrounding the next state budget, and also trying to frame some of the issues for the gubernatorial race. So absolutely, stay tuned.
Very, very interesting time.
Yes.
Rob,
absolutely.
Jason, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.